We're holding on Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, fifth line. Continuing on the topic of Matnas Shchivmera, the Gemara says, "Hahu Matnasa to have a Kosuva b'chayim uvamoves." There was a Matnas Shchivmera, and we're talking about that it was a Matana b'miktsas. So therefore, so it doesn't matter whether he recovers or not. Either way, as we've been learning these last few blat, he's not going to be getting back the nechosim anyway. But the twist is to have a kosuva b'chayim uvamoves. It's said in the Shnar that this gift should be effective when he's alive and when he's dead. So what does that mean? Rav Omahari, so fine. We could, either way, it's an irrevocable matrana. But the point of the question is going to be, are we going to consider it like a matnas bari or a matnas shchivmera? So the Rashbam points out we can't possibly say that the person who gave it was a bari, because then how would we have any opinion that it's like a matnas shchivmera? So Rav Omar Harei Kamatnas Shchivmera. So Rav says it has the din of a matnas shchivmera, namely that it takes effect only when he dies. And in fact that he would be able to retract it if he recovers. Because he's saying that it should, by saying Bamavis, he's explicitly saying that it should take effect only after he dies. Meaning all this time we've been talking about a regular Matnas Shchivmera, it doesn't really specify when it's going to take effect. So therefore you can say that if it was B'miktsas, then it's irrevocable. But here where he's explicitly said the word Bamavis, then it means that he wants it to take effect only after he dies, and Ein Shtar L'Achamisa.
But he said both.
So the Gemara is going to deal with the next couple of lines what Rav is going to do with the second Lashon. But it will take effect after he dies, because that's how a Matnas Shchivmera works. But on the other hand, precisely for that reason, if he doesn't die, then he's able to get it back. Ushmul Amari Kamatnas Bari, whereas Shmuel says it's like a Matnas Bari, and he won't be able to change his mind. So let's understand their svaris. Rav Omahare Kamatnas Shchivmera Midichtiv Ba Bamoves, because since the shtar says that it's to take effect when in death, that means Achamisa Ka'omale. That means he's saying that it should take effect after he dies, like a regular Matnas Shchivmera. So why did he write the word Bachayim? Means simin ba'alma d'chai. He wanted to write a simin in there that he will live. He didn't just want to write when I die. Al tiftach pela sotin. So he wanted to add the point that may Hashem save me and I don't die and I stay alive. But primarily, Rav says he's meaning for this to take effect after he dies. It's a matnas shchivmera, it takes effect after he dies, but the fact still remains, though, that means that im omad chozer, so therefore if he doesn't end up dying, then he's going to be able to get it back. Shmuel says, harei kematnas bari, he says, on the contrary, let's focus on the word mechayim, on the word bachayim, midichtiv bo bachayim, since he says it should be effective in life, meaning while he's alive, mechayim kama, means he wants it to be effective from when he's alive, which is a matnas bari. V'hai the cost of uvamoves, the fact that he wrote afterwards, and in death, all that means is kamando ama me'atavad olam. That's the equivalent of saying that this gift should be in effect forever, meaning it shouldn't be revoked. It shouldn't be, for example, something that's in effect only while I'm alive, and then it'll expire when I die. No, it's going to be forever. But primarily, he means it to take effect when he's still alive, and therefore it would be a matnas bari. Shmuel says that it's like a matnas bari. Now Amri Nahudoi, and now the Chachamim of Nahudoi said Hilchsa Kavasei de Rav. Even though usually in Dinim Mominus the halacha is like Shmuel, here the halacha is like Rav. So therefore, it's going to be considered a matnas shchiv merah, and therefore he would have the ability to take it back when he recovers. Omar Rava, but Rava says, it's not so simple, actually. Here we talked about the machlokas was where it said, bachayim, in life. What about if he said, Rava says, v'ikosava mechayim, but if he writes in it, from life, in other words, instead of bachayim of amavas, it says mechayim of amavas, then that would be different. Rava says kona, then he would be koneit, because then we would say it clearly means that he means for it to take effect while he's alive. However, the Gemara says, Omar Amemer, less hilchsa kavasei de Rava. The halacha is not like Rava. There's no difference between whether he says bachayim or mechayim. Either way, it's going to be considered, like Rav said, a matnas shchiv merah. It's going to take effect only after he dies, and therefore, im omad chozer, if he does recover, he is going to be able to retract it. So the Gemara says, why does a Meimah have to tell us that? Omaleir of Ashila, a Meimah Pshita. Isn't that obvious? The halacha is not like Rava in that. The Ha'ami Nahardori Hilchsa Kavasei the Rav. Didn't the Chachamim of Nahardor say that the halacha is like Rav, where he says, Bachayim of Amaves? So why would we think that Mechayim is any different? And the answer is Ma'udatema, Mechayim Murderav. On the contrary, you would think that maybe Rav would agree when it says Mechayim, which clearly means that it should take effect when he's alive. So therefore, Kamash Malon, therefore we need to be told that there's no difference, and therefore that the halacha wouldn't be like Rava. The halacha would be whether he writes Bachayim or Mechayim. Either way, it's the same thing. So the Gemara tells a case, there was a case of a person who came to Rav Nachman in Nahardah, where Rav Nachman was the Rosh Hashiva. So this was a case exactly like this, where there was a shtar that said Bachayim of Amavis. Shadre l'kamed Rav Yirmiya ba'abal shum tanya. But instead of paskening the din himself, Rav Nachman sent this guy told him to go to Rav Yirmiya ba'abba in Shum Tamya. And Shum Tamya is the name of a place elsewhere in Bavel. Apparently Rav Yirmiya ba'abba lived there. Now, why did Rav Nachman do that? Why didn't he just pasken the din straight out? Omar, Rav Nachman says, Pocha Asra de Shmuel, because here Nahardah is the city where Shmuel used to live. So therefore, Heichi Nevid, Kavasei de Rav, so how could we pass him like Rav? Even though, yes, we said the Nahardoi themselves, the Chacham of Nahardoi themselves, said the Halacha is like Rav, nevertheless, Nachman is saying, in Shmuel's own city, we shouldn't pass him against him. So therefore, if he wants a Psak Din, like, if he wants a Psak Din like Rav, I guess he doesn't want a Psak Din like Rav, to be exact. Rav would say the Shchiv Merah is able to take it back. Here this guy received the Matana, he would like to be able to keep it. Nevertheless, though, the point is that it's not Derech Eretzik to go Paskin like Rav in Shmuel's city. So he tells him, go to this other place and Rav Yirmiya ba'abba will Paskin for the Din for you over there. Okay. The Gemara tells another case. There was a woman who came for a din Torah to Rav. Same thing. There was a shtar that said b'chaim uvamavis. Offered Lord Rava kishmaite. So Rava paskin for her according to his own shita. We just said before that there's, according to Rava, there's a difference whether it says mechaim or b'chaim. In this case, it said mechaim uvamavis. And Rav was and Rava had said before that means that it takes effect when the giver is still alive. So this woman had herself been a shchiv merah previously, and she had given out such a shtar, and now she recovered. So now she lost out. So have a kotar delay. So she was. bothering him and bugging him and nudging him that you didn't pass him correctly for me. Apparently, as we're going to see from the story over here, she was knowledgeable enough to know that the halacha in this is like Rav, and therefore, and like the Nahadori said, and like Amema said, that the halacha is like Rav across the board, whether it says Mechaim or Bachaim, and therefore, so she's bugging Rava, how could you pass him for me otherwise? So, Rava says to the Papa Breder of Chanan, who was his scribe, who was writing out shtaris for him, he says, fine, Zilk Sovla, write out for her a document that says that she's entitled to get back the Nechassim, but at the end of the shtar, the shtar is like a Maisa Beis Din. It's a report of what happened in Beis Din. So fine, go write out for her a Psak Din that she's entitled. But at the bottom of it, write also the words Socher Alehen Oimatan. He can hire workers at their expense, or he can trick them. This is a quotation from a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Rabbeinu Gershom says actually that Rava at the time when this case happened was teaching this Mishnah, was teaching that part above Metzia to his Talmidim, so therefore it was in his mind. We learned in Bava Metzia, we had a case like this. You hire workers to do a job for you, so the din is poyo yochalachzeboy afilu b'chatsia yoyim, that a worker is able to quit the job anytime he wants because a yid is not an eved to a fellow yid, he's an eved only to Hashem, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. However, the Mishnah describes over there what happens if the one who hired them, what if we're talking about it's a dover ha'avod? What happens if because the workers quit, then the job is going to be destroyed or lost? It's a time sensitive thing, and it has to be done as soon as possible. So then the Mishnah says over there, in that case, he's able to hire new workers at the expense of the old ones, meaning basically that he's going to hire new workers. And if they charge more, then he can charge the extra amounts to the original workers. He can tell them, basically, you caused me a loss, and therefore you have to pay for the fact that now labor costs are higher. Oy matan, or the Mishnah says, he can trick them, he can tell them that he's going to rehire them at a higher wage, and then end up not paying them that higher amount, but rather the original amount. In any case, the point is, Rava is using that over here as a way of writing at the bottom of the shtar. So on the one hand, he wants to, this way she'll stop bugging him. But on the other hand, anybody who looks at the shtar and sees that phrase is going to understand that it means that he's doing it only in order to trick her, only in order to get her off his case. Amra, but she caught on to it. She realized what Rava had done. So she says to him, she says a curse to him, Litva Arbe, may his, meaning your, ship sink. Apparently Rava had ships with merchandise, and she's cursing him that a ship of his should sink. At Uya Kamatasli, how could you be misleading me like that? How could you be giving me a shtar that on the face of it says that I'm right and I have the right to get back this gift, and then you're writing in there something that says that you're just doing this in order to trick me? Well, Rava's Talmidim were concerned about her curse. After all, we know, Alti Kilas Hediat Kalabaynecha. Don't let the curse of even a simple person be something unimportant in your eyes. Here we have in this week's parasha, we have an illustration of that. There's many reasons that are brought why Yitzchak became blind in our parasha, and one of them is because back in Parashas Vayera, with the story with Avimelech and Sarah, he says, Hine hu loch ksusenai, and we learned about it in Bava Kamma, that he says, because you covered my eyes and deceived me and complained and claimed that you were Avraham's brother, that you were Avraham's sister, therefore in return for that, there should be blindness in your family, and it came true in Yitzchak. So now Rava's Talmidim, when they heard this woman saying that, they're concerned it might actually come true. Amshinu l'moni de Rava b'maya. So they took Rava's clothing and soaked it in water, figuring like this, it'll be symbolically, like instead of his ship sinking, his clothes will sink, and that would be enough that the curse is fulfilled that way, and that way the actual boat doesn't need to sink. It didn't work though. Nevertheless, though, Rava was not saved from the consequences. In the end, a ship of his did sink because of her curse. A couple of now, first of all, the Rashbam points out that we see from this then that the halacha is not like Rava. The very fact that the Gemara brings the story at the end of it here shows that in the end the halacha is not like Rava, and therefore, like Amemar had said, there's no difference between Bachayim or Mechayim. Still, we have to ask, the fact is, isn't Rava entitled to Paskin like his own Shitta? So actually, the Ritva and the Mukha Yosef say that no, actually, the fact is, since his is only a Das Yachid, then therefore he shouldn't Paskin like his own opinion. He's entitled to his opinion, but when it comes to practical psak halacha, he should take into consideration that most of the chachamim are saying against him, and then we said before, Amemar says the halacha is not like him, and therefore he should have paid attention to that. So because of that is why the Eidish made that ultimately it was able to happen to him. Then there's another interesting answer brought from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who says that after all. You have a very, very similar story, actually. There's a Gemara in Gittin that tells a very similar story involving Rava bar Rav Huna. So not the same Rava as our Gemara over here, but also a Chacham named Rava, where there was a psak din that he gave out, which again, this woman disagreed with and said, how could you do that? And she cursed him that his chair should be overturned. So there, his Talmidim also, they turned over his chair, literally, so that the curse should be fulfilled that way, but nevertheless, still Rava bar Rav Huna ended up suffering more severe consequences from it later. The point is, Reb Chaim explains over there, and we can say over here as well, that why is he doing it right in her presence? There it was, he kept on telling her that why you don't know what you're talking about. Here it's that he actually wrote it in the shtar in her presence. Fine, he needs to write something in order to make it clear that to a future dayan who looks at the shtar, not to actually give her the nechasim, but nevertheless, he didn't have to write it right there in her presence and cause her tzar, and therefore that made it possible for this to take effect. In fact, the Meiri mentions in this connection, you see, it shows you the importance of avoiding litzonus. You could say on Rava's level, this is litzonus to write out a shtar like that and then write a thing in that basically disregard everything I said before, and therefore and then Rava being a tzaddik, then he's held to a higher standard, and therefore sure enough he did end up having a boat of his sin.
If Narda says the halacha is like this and this person, how do we say that the end's not? Like, when do we say the halacha stays the way it is? When do we say, no, that changes?
No, so that's it. In other words, we're saying that the halacha is not like Rava. In this one case, Rava Paskin, like his own shitta, and there were consequences for it, actually. The bottom line is, therefore, the halacha is not like Rav, but the halacha is like the Nahudoi, namely that the halacha is like Rav, and that there's no difference between whether it says Bachayim or Mechayim, either way, and it's considered a regular Matnas Chiv Merah, and has all the dinim of that, in particular that if they recover, then they can get it back.
So Rav says the halacha is like Rav, then why would he shouldn't?
No, the halacha is not like Rav, the halacha is like Rav.
Oh, okay.
The halacha is like Rav against Shmuel, that is considered like a matnas chiv merah. Rava had drawn a distinction. If it says Bachayim or Mechayim, then it was Mechayim, then they're koina, and we're saying the halacha is not like that. Mishnah says, Loi kosav vash chiv merah. What happens if the shtar, what happens if there's a shtar with a lashon of matona in there? Now, we learned earlier in the Gemara that in order for it to be a matnas chiv merah, it has to be that the shtar itself contains a loshen that says that he was a chiv merah at the time. When he was sick and lying in bed, then he told us such and such. So now, loy kosa ba chiv merah. What happens if the shtar doesn't say a loshen, this loshen in there, that he was a chiv merah? And now we have, and Tosfos says, on the other hand, it also doesn't say that he was a bori. You could have the vice versa, where it explicitly says, well, actually, the Rashbam, both the Rashbam and Tosfos points out that you could have a loshen that would be typical for a matnas chiv merah, where you write in there, he said the following when he was sick and lying in bed. Or you can have by matnas body, where it says clearly he said this when he was healthy and walking on his and able to walk unaided in the street. So so now it doesn't say either of those lashonas in the shtar. So now so who I'm a shchiv menach, you see. So now he says the giver says I was a shchiv menach at the time, and therefore I should have the right to take it back. Behein emin bori hayisa, and there and the other people, the recipients, are telling him you were healthy at the time and therefore you shouldn't be able to retract it. So the mayor says he would have to bring proof that he was a shchiv menach. And if not, then that if he can't bring such proof, edim or whatever, then he would have to then they would get it. Give it a mayor. What kind of raya and why the mayor says he would have to give why the mayor says he would have to give such a proof? We'll see in the Gemara. So Chachamim and Motzim Machaber LeRaya, whereas the Chachamim say they want to take away the Nechosim from him, so they're the ones who would have to bring the proof. He's the Muchzak, after all. He's the one who has the Chazaka on the Nechosim, and therefore they would be the ones who have to bring the proof that that he was a Shchiv Merah. And if not, then he's entitled to take it back. As we're going to explain in the Gemara, why the Chachamim say that. A point, by the way, that the Rishonim bring up is, listen, all this time we've been saying that a matnas shchiv merah doesn't require a kinyan and a matnas body does. So then in that case, and here we're talking about, on the face of it, we're talking about there was no kinyan. So what do you mean? The recipients are saying it was a matnas body, then we'll tell them, well, there was no kinyan, so it doesn't work as a matnas body. And if there was a Kenyan, we learned before that we said a matnas shchiv merah. Okay, we said a matnas shchiv merah with a Kenyan. We have the whole machlokes Rav and Shmuel whether it works or not. So what's the scenario over here? Was there a Kenyan or not? So Rabbeinu Yonah brings that that we're talking about the shtar doesn't say one way or the other. So then the argument is: was there just a verbal Kenyan, or was there an actual Kenyan with a Kenyan suder? And then the Ritva gives a different explanation. Yes, the Shtar says there was a Kinyan, but he's saying that it wasn't just a Matnas Shchiv Merah, it was Mitzava Machmas Misa, which is the distinction that we've made before, where he explicitly says, I'm giving these Matonis because I feel that I'm about to die, where therefore then we said even if there's a Kinyan, and even if it was only B'miktas, then he would be able to take it back. So they're saying that, so they're saying, well, there was a Kinyan, and you were a body, therefore you don't get it back. He's saying, yes, there was a Kinyan, but I was Mitzava Machmas Misa, and therefore I should be entitled to get it back. So again, Reb Meir is saying he would have to bring the proof, and the Chum are saying they would have to bring the proof. So the Gemara sorts off. There was a case of such a shtar matana. They have a kosa ba. It's said in this shtar, part of the Lashon, it said, Kad have a ksir, the Romi ba'arse. It said that this shtar was written when he was sick and lying in bed, that he gave his nechosim. But the loy kosaba umi goy mare ifter levesa lome. But it did not say the usual loshen that you would say after that. From this illness, he passed away. So now, in the end, he died. But the question is, so usually, in other words, the point is that you could have a person is sick and he writes out and he has such a shtar written out. Then he recovers. Then he becomes sick from something else and then he eventually dies. So the usual loshen and a shtar would be they would write that not only that he was sick at the time, but that he never recovered from it. From that very same illness, then he died. Here it said the first half of the loshen, but not the second half. So therefore, now there's a claim that maybe he recovered in between. Then maybe he recovered in between, and therefore the gift is revoked. In fact, Tosfos points out it wouldn't even be that they're not even necessarily saying that he explicitly revoked it. But once he recovered from the illness, then automatically we would assume almost by default that he was chozer, that he retracted it, because again the whole point was that he had done it in figuring that he's going to die. And now we're saying there's a possibility that maybe he didn't. And the problem was also, now usually you would say, okay, call in the Edim and ask them. The scenario would be that the Edim are not available. Omar Rabba, So Rabbah said, "Harei mes, harei kivrei mechia cholov." Well, look, he's obviously dead now. We have a kever showing that he's dead. So therefore, we have every good reason to say that we would go according to what's called chazaka dehashta. We have a chazaka right now that he's dead. So therefore, we should say the chazaka would be that he died from the same illness during which he had had the shtar written. So in other words, we would say that we find him dead, and therefore that means he must have been sick there, because he must have been sick, because after all, people usually don't just die suddenly. So therefore, it's more likely the chazaka would tell us that it was the same sickness, and therefore that's that. Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says, that's not really so. If you're going to go according to the fact that he was sick, and still the fact is most sick people do recover. So Hashda, Abaya tells him, now let's consider, draw an analogy. Uma Svina, Madach in the case of a ship. Interesting that we have twice on the same daf over here, something about a ship. You have a case in the Mishnah in Gittin where you have those people on board a ship. And we know that ship was caught in a storm, and we don't know what happened to them. We don't know, were they saved in the end, or did the ship sink and everybody drowned? So now we say, most such cases when the ship sinks, then everybody drowns. And nevertheless, the Mishnah says, because we don't know, we have to apply the chumras of the living and the chumras of the dead. So that would be, for example, so an example of that would be, we know there's a halacha. We actually just had an Ein Yaakov as well. Interesting how Ein Yaakov is tracking the Gemara here a lot of times. Anyway, you have a din that a bas koyin who's married to a Yisrael and has children, or whether she has children from him or not, as long as she's married to him, she's also to eat truma. And then on the other hand, you have that a bas Yisrael who's married to a koyin is allowed to eat truma as long as her husband is alive. After her, in either case, after her husband dies, it also matters whether they have children, but that we're not dealing with that angle on it right now. So now, suppose you have on board that ship was a Korean, the husband of a Bas Yisrael. We would have to consider Mitzad HaSafek, her husband may have died, and we know he was on that ship. We don't know what the fate of that ship was. Therefore, she's not going to be able to eat truma. We know that he was on the ship. We know the ship was caught in a storm. We don't know what happened. Therefore, Ms. Suffolk, she won't be able to eat truma in case her husband has died. On the other hand, if she's a Bas Koyin married to a Yisrael, she's also not allowed to eat truma. We can't say, well, my husband has died, therefore I should be allowed to, because her husband may still be alive. So the point is, Abaya says, you see that in that case, even though in that case, most of the time, when a ship is caught in such conditions, then usually it sinks and the people die. Nevertheless, we have the suffix. So then Abaya says, cholin, sh'roiv cholin l'chaim, when it comes to sick people, most sick people do recover. In fact, the same Mishnah in Gittin over there mentions that if you have a shliach is bringing a get from Medina Sayam, and the husband was old or sick when he left, then nevertheless he's able to give the wife the get and assume that the person who gave it to him, that the husband who gave it to him, is still alive. So most sick people do recover. Like Kolshiken, how much more so that we shouldn't say that he died from that illness, but rather of, yes, it's true, of course he's dead now, but why should we say that it's because that was necessarily from the first illness? Why shouldn't we say there's a high likelihood that he recovered, as most sick people do, and then he died of some other illness, and in that case, then meanwhile the gift was revoked. So Tosfos compares it with another case in Gittin over there, where you have a case that Rashbam has brought the case where you give her the get b'cheskes shukayim, but the difference is that there in the end he's still alive. Here at the end of it he's dead. So, but the question is when he died and what illness, not when he died, what illness he died from. Anyway, Abaya argues against Rabbah in short and says you can't really compare You can't say that we should go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, the current Chazaka, and use that as a basis for anything, because you shouldn't say that. We should consider against that the Chazaka that most sick people do recover. Now, the Rashbam says, the next piece, the Gemara is going to say, that Rabba holds in this regard like Rav Nosson. So the Rashbam points out, we don't see that Rabba changed his mind. We don't see that he retracted his view because of what Abaya said. Evidently, he held there's enough of a difference between them. And since the Gemara is going to next say that he holds like Rav Nosson, and the Gemara mentions in various places Rav Nosson was a Dayan, that was his profession, among the Chachamim, he was a Dayan, he judged Dini Mominus, and therefore he's an expert in Dini Mominus, and the Halacha is generally like him, then that would mean that the Halacha is like Rabba over here. There is a machlokas we've shown him on that. And the Rif and a number of other Rishonim say that no. Later on, the Gemara is going to say that Rav Nosson, which the Gemara is going to quote now, holds like Rav Meir in our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to bring Rav Yaakov, who the Gemara is going to bring next to Machlokas, Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov holds like the Chachamim. Well, the Halacha is like the Chachamim, and therefore that would mean the Halacha would have to be like Rav Yaakov against Rav Nosson, and therefore in turn that would mean the Halacha is not like Rabba. And there's further discussion about that. Rishonim discussed that Rabba himself may have changed his mind. But in any case, on top of that, there's a different Gersa over here at the top of the Amud, that maybe it's not Rabba over here, but rather Rabba. So in that case, then at least that later on, we're going to see something in the Gemara that implies that Rabba holds, the Gemara is going to say further on that Rabba himself says that Rav Nosson is not like the Chachamim of our Mishnah. And again, since the Halacha is like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, because the Halacha is like Yochid, again, is usually like the Chachamim against Rav Meir, Rabba against Yochid, then that would imply that Rabba himself must have changed his mind. But then the Rashba says over here, the Gemara is not necessarily saying Rabba, it's Rabba, so it's not a matter of changing his mind. But in any case, he agrees that the Halacha is not like Rav Nosson, and in turn not like Rabba or Rava in our Gemara over here, but rather like Abaya. So in short, you have a Machlokas who's showing him who the Halacha is like. Do we accept Rabba's point, Hare Kivre Mechia Cholav, that we go according to the Chazaka de Mehashta, or is the Halacha like Abaya, that you have to compare it to that case of a ship that's caught in a storm? In the Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, in fact, like the Rif and the Rosh, and not like the Rashbam, meaning that in fact the Halacha would be not like Rabba, but rather like Abaya, that we don't say that we go according to the Chazaka de Mehashta. Rather, we would say, unless we have solid evidence that he passed away from that illness, then we would say that in fact it may have been a different one, and therefore that he, in between he recovered, and therefore the gift is revoked. With that said, though, that Amar does bring over there from the Nimukah Yosef, That when we say you need Eidos, so the Eidim can be people who took care of him and while he was sick, and they can determine whether it was the same illness or whether he recovered in between. In fact, the Nimukah Yosef in turn brings from earlier Rishonim, from the Ramban and the Ritva, that really it doesn't even need to be. They don't have to have been with him 24/7. They ask the people, the members of the household about his condition. And if they tell him that in fact he is getting worse and worse, then that's good enough Eidos for Beis Din to say that he died from that illness. Avraham Moshe, you were asking the other day what happens, for example, if the Eidim are contradicted by doctors, so that would all factor into this. In other words, we would say we have to get Eidos whether in fact he was a Shivmara at the time and whether he died of that illness or whether he recovered in between. The pastors, doctors would be like any other Eidim in that regard. I mean, I guess in any case, based on us to cross examine the Eidim and make sure they know what they're talking about. So obviously, generally, I guess we would assume that doctors are likely to know more of the facts, and therefore we may well end up going according to them. But it's not so much because they're doctors, but because they come and give their Eidos.
Now, if he didn't appoint anybody else, his items, so can we say that he didn't do it because he already did it the first time around, and he was relying on that?
No, because again, im oman choizer, we're talking about that this was a matana b'kuloi, and that this was a matana b'kuloi, and if he recovers, then he gets it back. So he doesn't. So fakir. If he doesn't explicitly say afterwards, if he doesn't do something to demonstrate that there was a matana to somebody else, then it's going to go back to him, and then it's going to go to his yoshin. So the basic question is over here again. If the shtar had explicitly said that it was a matnas bori, then there's nothing to talk about. If the shtar had explicitly said the full loshen that it says by a shidmara, namely that he said this when he said the following when he was sick in bed and he died of that illness, then the edim that are signed on that shtar would be all the evidence we need. Here we're talking about the whole point is it said that he was sick, but it didn't say that part about it that he died of that illness. So now the question is whether maybe he recovered in between, where Rava says we don't have to worry about that because we go according to the Chazaka, the Mehashta, and Abaya is pointing out that most sick people recover. So, and
they
again,
both,
yeah,
they both hold the same thing. They both hold that now that he recovered and this is a new situation.
No, there's a big difference. According to Rabba, the point is that we don't have any particular reason to say that he recovered in between. The fact that now he's dead indicates that we should go according to the Chazaka de Mehashta. Right now, the Chazaka is he's dead, and the Chazaka in turn would be that it was from the original illness. And Abaya is pointing out to him, no, Roiv Cholim L'chaim, and therefore you shouldn't say that, just the opposite. You have a Gen Stat, a Chazaka, that most sick people recover, and therefore that he did recover in between. So again, now you have a machlokas rishonim, who the halacha is like. The Rashbam paskins like Rabba. Most of the other rishonim paskin like Abaya. And in Shulchan Aruch, Itaka brings that opinion that therefore, so we would need evidence to say that it was the same illness. And if not, then we're going to assume, like Abaya says, that it was not, that it was a different one, and therefore that the gift is revoked. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer of Huna Breda Rishua, Kiman Ozla Hoshmaita de Rabba, according to which Tana is Rabba making a statement? Rabba, who had said that we go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, that we look at the fact, look, now he's dead, therefore we have every reason to say that it was from the same illness, that would be Kudab Nosin. Specifically, Rabba is going like Rab Nosin in that regard. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, in a case like our Mishnah, where it doesn't say one way or the other whether he was a Shchiv Merar or a Bori. Now, there's a slight difference, remember. In our Mishnah, it didn't say at all any Loshen of Shchiv Merar or a Bori. Here we're talking about, whereas Rabba's case, where Rabba and Abaya were arguing about, is where it did say that he was a Shchiv Merar, but it didn't say whether he died of that illness or a different one. In any case, so Braisa says, in the case of our Mishnah, namely where it doesn't say either Loshen at all, so me motzi miyad mi, so the Braisa says in a case like that, where it didn't say Bori or Shchiv Merah, who gets to take away from who gets to keep the property and take it away from the other, who motzi miyadehen below Raya, the giver will be able to get it back from the Mekablim without even any proof. He doesn't need to bring a proof that he was a Shchiv Merah because he has the Chazaka on the Nechasim. Now, it's true that right now he's healthy, but we're not going to say that means that before he was healthy, he may well have been sick at the time, and then he recovered, like Abaya says. So therefore, so the din would be, he gets to take it away from them without even bringing any proof. The hein ein metzin miyada ela b'raya. If they want to take it away from him, then they would need to bring a raya that he was a bori at the time. Tosfos points out why the double loshen. Of course, if he can take it away from them without a raya, then they would need to take it away from him with a raya. What it means is, in other words, even though the shtar doesn't state that he was a bori, and therefore they have, and therefore, and therefore, even though the shtar doesn't say that he was a bori, if they can bring a raya that he was in fact a bori at the time, then that will override the fact that the shtar didn't say one way or the other. In other words, we wouldn't say, well, once the shtar doesn't say that he was a bori, then automatically that means he wasn't, and therefore they have no basis. No, if they're able to bring a proof that he was in fact bori at the time, then they will be able to get it. That's the point. That's the point of the expression ein mitzia miyada ela b'raya. They won't be able to take it out away from him unless they have a raya, implying, but if they have a raya, they will be able to. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov. So that's what Rabbi Yaakov says. So it comes out so far that Rabbi Yaakov was saying something similar to what Abaye had said. Just because right now he's healthy doesn't mean that before he was healthy as well. And therefore, so unless they can prove that he was when he gave this matana, then they're not going to be entitled to it. Rab Nosson says no. Im Borihu, if right now he's healthy, then fine. We go according to Chazaka Dehashta. Then we say the way it is right now is probably the way it was before, and therefore that he was a body. So therefore, so if now he's body, all of the Haviraya shayish shivmera, then fakert, he's going to have to bring the proof that he was a shivmera at the time, that there was a different status. The im shivmera who, if right now he's a shivmera, aleim the Haviraya shabori haya, then on the contrary, they're the ones who are going to have to bring the proof that he was healthy at the time. So meaning, in other words, so we see that Rav Nosson says that you go according to Chazaka Dehashta, you go according to the current Chazaka, and you say whatever it is now is presumably what it was before. To be exact, Tosfos says, really, I mean, you also have, listen, if there's a suffix, then anyway, you can't hamotzi mechaber l'varaya. So what we really, the main point is, the point is, though, that we see from the first case where he's healthy, and we say, we go according to that, and we take away the nechosim from him and give it to them on the supposition that if now he's healthy, he was before as well, and we see from that that Rav Nosson says even to take away money from one person to another, we can go according to Chazaka Demehashta, which fits with what Rabba was saying at the top of the Amud. So that's what Rav Huna Breda Rav Ishua is saying. You see that Rabba's opinion follows Rav Nosson, that you go according to Chazaka Demehashta, not only as far as keeping money, but even as far as taking money from one person and giving it to the other. Okay, so the Gemara brings Amar Rabbi Elazar Ulatuma B'machloikas. Now you should know, as far as dinim of Tumah V'Tara, that's going to be subject to a machloikas. That's going to be subject to a machloikas. Namely, in other words, the same machloikas of Rabbi Yaakov and Rav Nosson is going to affect also a din in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Now you have like this. There's a concept in halacha that if you have a suffix of whether a person became tameh or whether an object is tameh or whatever. So it's going to depend. One of the factors that goes into it is whether it's in Rishus HaYachid or in Rishus HaRabim. The Gemara elsewhere learns it respectively from Pesukim. That with a sota we see that we consider her tamei misafik, and there were and it's a rishus hayachid. There's only her and the potential boil over there, and we say that she's tamei misafik. And then on the other hand, when you have a rishus harabim, when you have an area where there are rabim defined as three or more, then we say a safik tuma over there is tahor. And again, we learn that from Sukkim, we learn that from a case involving bringing the Korban Pesach for Tumah. Whatever it is, this is an established halacha that when you have a Safek Tumah, one of the factors that goes into it is whether it was in Rosh Hashanah Yachid or Rosh Hashanah Rabin. Now, you have certain kinds of places that sometimes may be one and sometimes the other. The definition of Rosh Hashanah Yachid and Rosh Hashanah Rabin, as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tara, is not the same, is not exactly the same as it is for Hilchos Shabbos. Sometimes you have a place which is considered Rosh Hashanah Rabim as far as Shabbos, but Rosh Hashanah Yochid as far as Tumah, or vice versa. One of those examples is when it comes to fields. So like this, Titnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Taras, Bika. When you have a valley full of fields, now there are times of year when people are walking through those fields, and there are times when people are not. So suppose you have this valley full of fields, is surrounded by a fence, that Rashbam explains. So therefore, as far as Shabbos is concerned, it would be a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Now, Midrabbanan, it doesn't have all the dinim of Rosh Hashanah Yachid. If it's more than a certain size, you're not going to be able to carry in it. Nonetheless, it's still considered Rosh Hashanah Yachid on a Daraisa level, in the sense that if you were to carry or throw something in there from Rosh Hashanah Rabin into it, then you'd be Chayev. Only did Rabbanan, because it's more than a certain size, you can't carry it. Anyway, so you have this area, b'moisachama, so then during the summertime, when the grain has already been harvested, so then it's considered Rosh Hashanah Rabim, so then Rosh Hashanah Yochid l'Shabbos, or Rosh Hashanah Rabim l'Tumah. Then as far as Shabbos, it would still be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, because it does have a fence around it. As far as Tumah, it would be considered a Rosh Hashanah Rabim, because many people walk through it. The most extreme, whereas during the winter time when the grain is growing over there, Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Lakan or Lakan, then it's going to be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid for both purposes. So therefore, so Rabbi Elazar says, you should know the same machlokas is going to apply between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Nassan, is going to apply in this kind of case. So a person comes with a shaila. I went into this area. And there was a Suffolk tomb over there. I don't know whether it was during the summertime or the wintertime. So we look at, according to Rav Nassan, we would go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. We would say, well, what time of year did he come and ask the Shaila? If he asked during the summertime, then we're going to tell him that it's considered now Rosh Hashanah Rabim, Latumah, because people walk through there, because there's no grain or anything growing in there, so people commonly use it as a shortcut. And to a certain extent, they're allowed to. We learned back in Bava Kamma, it was actually yesterday's Shlosh HaPorachim of Rambam, about the takonis that Yeshua made when the Jewish people conquered and divided out Yisrael, and one of them is that you're entitled to walk through paths in people's fields up until the rains start, and then the farmers are plowing their fields, and you don't want to ruin that. Anyway. So according to Rav Nassan, we would go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. So if he asks during the dry season, then we would tell him that misafik your Torah, because right now this place has a din of Rosh Hashanah Rabim, and therefore we extend that back to when you actually went in there, because we don't know whether it was during the summer or the winter. If it was in Yomos HaGesham, if he asks during Yomos HaGeshamim, during the rainy season, then we're going to tell him your Tomei, because you go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. That you would go going according to Chazaka de Hashta. That would be according to Rav Nassan. Meanwhile, according to Rav Yaakov, then we would say, until now we had a Chazaka that he was Tahar. So therefore, so only if Edom come and say that he went in there, be most Hagshamim, only then is he going to be Tameh. So Rabbi Elazar is telling you the same machlokas where Rabbi Nassan is saying you go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, and Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you go according to the Chazaka of the conditions of the thing at the time, meaning, in other words, again, Rabbi Yaakov had said, for example, that here he's a bori right now, but still that doesn't tell us that he was a bori when he gave the matana. He may well have been a shkibana, and we go according to the fact that he has the nechosim, he's the muchzak in the nechosim, and Rabbi Yaakov takes that and considers that the primary factor. Well, by the same token over here, this person has a chazaka of being tohar, and therefore we're going to say that he remains tohar unless we have proof to the contrary. Whereas Rav Nassan is going to say that you go according to, Chazaka de Mehashta, and therefore you have to look at the Chazaka of what the circumstances are of the field right now, whether it's the rainy season or the sun or not. Tosfos actually points out that the Gemara, when it discusses this in Shabbos, says here that Rashbam is saying that it's talking about that it's surrounded by a fence. But the Gemara actually mentions over there that maybe not necessarily. Some Amiroyim over there learn that we're talking about that it's not surrounded by a fence, but so therefore it would be considered a Carmelis, and we're calling it Rosh Hashanah Yochid only because it's not Rosh Hashanah Rabim. In other words, maybe for the purposes of the Hilchos Shabbos, it wouldn't be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid as far as that a person would be chayav for carrying in and out of it from Rosh Hashanah Rabim. We just mean, in other words, that it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabim, in that he would be chayav for carrying it for Amos. But that's a side point. In any case, the point is that primarily we're talking about over here when it's considered Rosh Hashanah Yochid and when it's considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. That part everybody agrees to, but the Machlokas is now when he asks a Shaila later on and he's not sure when it was that he went in there, where Rabbi Elazar is telling us you're going to have the same Machlokas between Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov about what the Din would be. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, in this connection, Rabbi Hananel had wanted to explain the reason why it's considered a Shusha Yachin in Yemos Dag Shamim is because people don't go in there because it's muddy and wet. But Tosfos says that's not why. It's because the grain is growing over there, the crops are growing over there, and you're not going to walk through there so as not to ruin them. So the Gemara brings Omar Rava. So Rava brings in this connection another din. Now the Rashbam explains that this is not a continuation of what Rabbi Elazar had said. It's not, there is a girsa, Hagoris Habach brings that there was a girsa, v'omar Rabba. Namely, therefore, that Rabbi Elazar is saying a din, that you have that Mishnah, and further that Rava mentions a particular detail within that, and then Rabbi Elazar is addressing that and pointing out that you're going to have the same machlokas Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov there as here. The Rashbam says can't be. Rabbi Elazar is before Rava, so he's not going to be referring to something that Rava says. Rather, Rava is mentioning a separate point over here, having mentioned this point about Rosh Hashanah Yochid versus Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, then Rava is going to mention another relevant detail over here. So, Omar Rava, Loi Shonu El Shalai Ovru all of Yemos Dag Shamim. Now, this would only apply that we're saying that during the summertime, it's Rosh Hashanah Rabbim as far as Tumah, because again, people are always walking in and out of there. But Rava says that would apply only if, ever since, now again, the Rashbam is learning that we're talking about that the place is fenced in. So after they fenced it in, if there hasn't yet passed a rainy season since they fenced it in. But Rava says, I will offer all of Yemos Dag Shamim, but if after they fenced it in, the Yemos Dag Shamim have already passed, once it became a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, during the wintertime, Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Lakan or Lakan, then it remains a Rosh Hashanah Yochid even during the summertime. So why would that be? The Rashbam says two possibilities, either that there's an actual svara, even midaraisa, to say that because it's fenced in and there was a period of time of Yemos Dag Shamim when people are not walking through it, then it retains that status even afterwards. Or the other possibility, you could say it's a chumra of Dirabbanan to consider a Rosh Hashanah Yochid across the board. Then the Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, who says that Rava is in fact arguing with Rabbi Elazar. Here the Rashbam had said, you can't say Rabbi Elazar is referring to what Rava had said, because Rava was after Rabbi Elazar, but you could say Rabbeinu Hanano learns that Rava is disagreeing with Rabbi Elazar. Here Rabbi Elazar had said that when the guy didn't know whether he went in there during Yemos Dag Chama or Yemos Dag Shamim, then his status is going to depend, on what season he asked the Shaila in, and that in turn is going to be subject to a machlokas, Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov. Rava is saying, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, that no. Rava is saying that when do we say, that, according to that, Shalai Ovru Olav, which means the Tumah being in there, when the Suffolk Tumah that's in there was there only during the summertime, then we would say we can consider, is it a Rosh Hashanah Yochid or is it a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? But if we have, since the Suffolk Tumah developed in there, let's say you don't know whether there's a paver in there or something, and meanwhile the rainy season has passed, then Rava is saying it's going to be a Rosh Hashanah Yochid for both purposes, meaning then it's not going to be subject to the Machlokas of Nosson and of Yaakov anymore. So in short, we have two different ways, according to the Rashbam, of learning what Rava is saying over here. Is it that once we mention the point of Nosson and of Yaakov that their machloikas impinges on this halacha, then Rava is telling you, by the way, you should know that if Ovru all of Yemos Dag Shamim, if it's already the place was fenced in and now Yemos Dag Shamim have passed, then it's going to be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid regardless? Or is Rava saying we're not talking about how long it's been fenced in, we're talking about how long has the Tumah been there? And then Tosfos has problems with both of those explanations, and discusses in some detail, and Tosfos brings a third possibility. When we say, like, Ovru Olav Yemos Dag Shamim, so yeah, it does mean We are talking about, like Rabbeinu Hananel says, we're talking about since the tumah has been, the suffix tumah has been there, but what we mean is, in other words, so here we know that since this person passed through that field, the Yemosa Gshamim haven't happened yet, but we don't know, but again, he doesn't know whether he went in there during the summertime or during the winter. So now what we're saying is, if he doesn't know which season he went into, and since then Yemosa Gshamim passed, even if he asks during the summertime, then Rava is saying it's going to be considered Rishus Yoch of the Truma, because then you can't say Chazaka de Mehashta, because, it's more likely that it was during the winter, and during the winter it's going to be considered Rishus Yoch Lakan Lakan. So that would explain, in other words, Tosfos points out, if it was just a matter of Rava arguing with Rabbi Lozer, like Rabbeinu Hananel explained, then why doesn't the Gemara bring this in any other place? There are other places in Shas where it brings this whole point, where it brings this whole point as well, and the Gemara doesn't bring this, over there. And according to the Rashbam also, we would expect it to be in other places. So therefore, it's relevant specifically over here, where we're pointing out that it's subject to the Machlokas, Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov, then it's relevant to point out that even though, according to Rabbi Nosson, we would say Chazaka de Mehashta, Chazaka de Hashta, that would go according to the current Chazaka, there is going to be a factor to consider, says Rava, whether in fact, not only he doesn't know which season he went in there, but since then Yemosa Gshamim have passed, then it's more likely that he went in there in Yemosa Gshamim, and therefore that it's a Rishus Yochid, and therefore he's going to be Tomei Nesachet. So that would be why we're bringing it specifically over here. Okay.
When a tree is growing after the winter, so people still want to have people, strangers, walking around their fields?
So when we say Yemosa Gshamim, we mean, at the end of the Yemosa Gshamim, at the end of the winter time is when they're going to be harvesting their grain. So at that point, there's nothing preventing people from walking in there. So, we don't mean, in other words, we mean Yemosa Gshamim, we mean the season, we mean the rainy season, the time when the crops are growing over there, after which Yemosa Chama is already going to be the time when it's harvested. Yeah.
But during harvesting, people don't walk around in people's fields, right?
During the harvest itself, not. But so we mean Yemosa Gshamim, we mean, in other words, the time when people are commonly walking around in there or not. And the truth is, really, once the grain has grown, then there's less of an issue people walking through there. We're not talking about, we're concerned that people are going to steal the grain or something. We're just talking about you don't want people to be walking in there and trampling on the plants. Once they've already grown, which they do during Yemosa Gshamim, then you have less reason, and they're fine, let people use your field as a shortcut. They'll know not to trample on the plants. So there's enough people. Remember, in order for it to be a Rishus Rabim L'Truma, all you need is three people minimum. So you have enough people are going to be going through there. You may even have those people, maybe the workers themselves. Fine, but the point is, during the Yemosa Gshamim, they're going to be generally staying out of there.
So here the amount of people for Rabim and regularly is a major difference. The three people makes the Rishus Rabim.
Three people like Sirius Rabin, that's what we're saying. So therefore, that's the point, in other words. So it's not even we have to wait until the harvest necessarily. Once the grain has grown, then already the owner has less of a problem with people walking through the field over there because at that point they're not going to be trampling the grain anymore. So, Tosfos says exactly that point. So the rainy season is Mishatered Revia Shnia. Once the second rainfall of the season falls, which is sometime in Cheshvan, and the point is that because Misham Va'elach Gdeilim Azroyim, from then on the seeds are growing, Gedurus Haserego Mazekas Lahem, and stepping, trampling around the field is harmful to them. But so the point is, in other words, once they're fully grown enough that people aren't going to be trampling on them, then there's not an issue anymore, and that's going to happen at the end of Yemosa Gshamim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, the point is, again, we have this machlokas of Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov, primarily on Dini Momonos, which we're saying now has an implication as far as Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara as well, and as far as whether, so again, who the halacha is like. So the Rashbam had said the halacha is like Rav Nosson because he's a Dayan. But on the other hand, the next piece of Gemara is going to say that Rav Nosson is only like Rav Meir of our Mishnah, and Rav Yaakov is like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, and that would indicate the halacha would have to be like Rav Yaakov. And again, most of the Rishonim do pass in that way. Okay.
Why?
Because in general, in a Mishnah, we usually pass them like the Chachamim against the Das Yochid. In this case, we have Rav Meir and the Chachamim. That would mean the Halacha would be like the Chachamim, even if that means going against Rav Nosson, who was a Dayan.
Well, what they call Chachamim, they're all Chachamim. Chachamim.
Nobody said you're not Chachamim, of course, but you have the Chachamim, means the majority, means the Rabbin. Yochid Rabbin, Halacha Rabbin.